Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I'm glad you joined me tonight. I got something in an email, actually on Facebook today, from one of my really, really dedicated and supportive listeners, someone I became friends with a while back when my grandson got hurt. He is quite an advocate for people in general. He's been a big part of the Bully movie, and he is he's done a lot of work with children. And he sent me this, and I thought to myself, my gosh, I have to share this with everybody because you may need it. This may make a difference in what you might have going on now. It's a little bit long. I hope you'll bear with me because I think it has some very, very, very good information. The title of it is My Bullied Daughter's Loneliness Haunted Me. Change. Sometimes it's really good. Sometimes it can leave you helpless. A few years back, change is what led to my 8-year-old daughter's world being turned upside down. She changed schools because we moved to a new house. My princess was in grade 3 at the time, and she encountered her first set of bullies. I felt helpless. These bullies were not the big tough ones that steal your lunch money or shove your head in the toilet. They were cute little darlings who loved princesses and everything pink. My daughter, being a tomboy, became an instant target. She was not girly enough. She had her distinct sense of style that didn't sit well with those other girls. She loved superheroes and everything related to sports. The mean girls at her school were ready to take on their tweens, while my girl still enjoyed hanging out at the playground. She was a misfit. The first year, I blamed the challenges she faced on her adjusting to the new school. I spoke to the teachers and tried to find solutions for her. I bought her a girly wardrobe that her strong personality rejected. I bought her a football so that kids in her grade would see an incentive to play with her, but nothing worked. She was still left out of every activity. She would come home sad every day. She would cry every week. We would have pep talks regularly, but I could not mend my daughter's broken heart. I could not take back the words kids said to my child. Her loneliness haunted me. As a mother, I was watching a child dying on the inside. It was like watching a beautiful flower wilting in the cold. She was at the end of grade 4 with not a friend in sight. I accepted her situation wasn't going to change because I was bullied as a child, and I knew that unless she changed schools again, things would remain the same. I remembered one of my bullies from childhood once telling me that he didn't care if I complained about him. He said, "What's the worst that's going to happen to me? I'm going to get suspended for a day or two. My mom will ground me for a week, but after that, I'll be back." There was such conviction in his statement that I remembered being livid with fear. When I was a kid, I realized there was only so much schools, principals, and teachers could do. Now, as an adult who survived bullying, I realized it was my responsibility as a parent to figure out how to set up a system to protect our kids. After a year and a half of watching my daughter's misery, I took matters into my own hands. I decided I would surround her with girls on my own time so she could make friends in an environment she was comfortable in, because swimming classes, soccer, and basketball didn't help. So my faith-based youth group began. I called some of my own friends that I grew up with and asked if they would be interested in sending their daughters over for an evening full of motivation, art, and baking. We would do this every 2 weeks. It started with only 3 girls, but soon snowballed till I had 12 girls sitting around my dining room table. We made lip gloss, origami, cupcakes, all the while discussing hard-hitting issues like being peacekeepers in the world and issues of body image for girls. I had girls from all different backgrounds with different interests come together and find joy in baking and motivation. They all seemed so happy, their joy made my heart sing. They chose a name for themselves, the Habs Peacekeepers, because they loved the Montreal Canadiens, Montreal NHL hockey team, who is known as the Habs, and their goal was to be peacekeepers wherever they went. As the youth group took on a life of its own, my daughter's situation at school didn't change much. Every year I wrote letters to her teachers. Some days they were really bad, and some incidences were very painful. Her teachers would get involved, and things would improve for a few weeks, and then would go back to the way they were. Though things remained tough at school, slowly I started seeing little changes in her. She stopped crying after school. Instead, she wanted to focus on befriending her teachers and doing well in school. There were still some occasional setbacks, but her Habs Peacekeeper buddies became her support group that she would look forward to seeing every 2 weeks. Either the youth group was helping her, or perhaps she was just developing a thick skin. I wasn't sure. I didn't realize how integral her new friends were for her until this past holiday season when I became really ill. I was unable to meet up with my youth group for 2 months, and that's when the bullying demon started to haunt my baby girl all over again. Mommy, I feel like I don't exist in my class. Mommy, those girls are still spreading rumors about me. So I called the principal again, who could do very little for my broken-hearted child. Yes, there are great anti-bullying programs at her school, but it helped her very little. What is a zero-tolerance policy? I'm not sure. Perhaps I haven't raised hell like I should have at her school. But maybe that's because I think sometimes we have to find solutions away from the problems. When I had a bad case of the mean girls in grade 6, there was very little that could be done to change them. Kids need support when they are bullied. If their environment doesn't change, as parents, we have to think outside of the box. These past 3 years have been very difficult for our family. But my husband and I saw an opportunity to help our child and help others become anti-bullying advocates. Since its inception, the girls that attend have changed. Now we are down to a solid group of 5 or 6 girls. Plus there is tons of big sister support from all the families who take part regularly. As they grow into their teens, their interests and concerns have evolved. We don't make lip gloss anymore. Instead, we make brown bag dinners for homeless people that my husband and I drop off to a homeless shelter. Instead of talking about bonding, the youth group now discusses issues like self-respect, drugs, peer pressure, and bullying. Though change might be tough at times, it teaches one to look back and see the positive things that have come out of it. It teaches us to adapt and overcome obstacles. Getting bullied is one of those things that can make you stronger, but will scar you for life. Not everyone addresses the signs of bullying. It's important that as a society at large, we become sensitive enough to admit when a child needs help. We must stop being a culture that blames the victim. Most importantly, we must stop creating lofty rules that we can't keep. I was blessed to come out stronger, and now as an adult, it is my hope that my daughter comes out of this even stronger. Amber, please take the time to watch this powerful video. Now, she put a video with this that was done by someone else that just blew me away as well. It's a young man narrates it, and it's almost like a poem. But it's all about everything she's just written about, how we can rally, what happens if we don't rally. There's parts of it that, and he has little cartoons that you can see on the video. I'm going to do my very best to figure out a way with my very untechnical being to let you all listen to this, because this is also incredibly moving and honest as can be, just like this letter from this young woman. This is so, everything she's written here is true. And if any of you have a child, you've been through some of this, maybe all of it, maybe more than this, but you definitely know what she's talking about, because I do. Having four children and all my grandchildren, life can be really, really awful for some of these kids. Really awful. A lot scarier than any of you probably can remember. Because once you become a grown-up and start making your own rules and hopefully rule your own kingdom, it's not quite so in your face all the time, but it still exists. And as we've talked about very recently, the bullying that takes place in the workplace, the bullying that takes place even with your peers. If you have social groups, sometimes there's even bullying there. And I loved what she said about the fact that the bullies were not the big tough guys, like what we talked about the other night. They were little princesses. Little princesses. And they were harder on that young girl than somebody putting her in the toilet bowl and giving her a swirly. At least that would have been done and over with. She could have cried once and been finished with it. So I need everybody to think about this. I need everybody to think about the fact that we talked last Friday about workplace and about all the different things that can happen wherever we are. And then the wonderful talk we had with Amanda and about the little children and where they're going and what they're already experiencing in school and in their private lives. Now, I'm going to bring in Shelley because I'm hoping we can do some discussing about what this lady has written and see if we can come up with some more answers. Hi, Shel.
Hi, Reen.
Isn't that a wonderful letter?
Wow, that was very, very moving. I got to be honest with you. I was actually choked up at a couple of the things that were addressed in there. That was quite remarkable. And one of the things that struck me is something that I've seen, not just with, you know, with parents and children, but people in general, is that you could have 10 different people have the same challenge face them, and yet you get one person that is very remarkable and that has a level of heart and love for people, and that's really what it takes, that decides to rise above it and figure out a solution, figure out a way to make something positive of it, how to make it better, instead of just, you know, sitting back and complaining and having a, you know, woe is me attitude and why is this happening to me or my kid. This individual did some of the most remarkable things in bringing about some very positive changes for these young girls. I just think I'm extremely impressed by her actions or his actions. I don't know if it was a man or a woman that wrote that letter.
It was the mom. Me too. And I got to tell you, there's been times in my life when I've actually thought to myself, when one of my kids were going through something like this, I wish I could just, you know, get their friends for them, because I'll be wiser about choosing them. You know,
yeah.
I've actually thought that in my lifetime, and that's really what she did.
Exactly.
Which was amazing. Exactly. And she didn't really choose them. She went to people that she loved and trusted. So, you know, she was hoping, you know, that there would be some, you know, some connections there with their children, with her child. And indeed there
mm-hmm.
was.
Right.
You know,
right.
The other thing that we don't really talk about when we're discussing some of this stuff is the fact that, well, let me take that back, because I do believe you said it last night. You talked about behaving like a victim. And I do think that is a part of it, and teaching a child to understand Well, like we tell grown-ups, like I've counseled thousands of people, if somebody's given you a hard time for no reason, it's their stuff, not yours. But when
right.
when you're 13, when you're 8, when you're 10, do you really get what that even means? You know, do you really understand the concept behind somebody giving you a hard time because they're having a hard day? I don't know
right.
if that makes sense to you when you're that young. But in truth, I would say probably 70 to 80% of the unkindness that goes on in the world has to do with the bully's bad day, nothing to do with you.
Right, right. Well, I don't know. I think, I mean, I don't know. I don't know that it would go, you know, terribly young, like a 5 or 6 year old. But I think that children that, you know, 9, 10, 11, and on up, can be reasoned with to understand that things directed at them that are mean aren't necessarily something that they brought out in that person, that that person is having a rough time. Because I've had discussions with my niece who's 10 years old
mm-hmm.
because her feelings got very hurt by somebody one time. And we had this discussion, and at the end of the discussion, she did feel better because I got her
mm-hmm.
to actually feel compassion for this individual that she considered a friend of hers who did something very mean. And I explained it to her. I said, you know, somebody's not going to do something mean to you unless they're not okay on some level. I said, because if
mm-hmm.
you're happy, I said, let me ask you a question. I said, if you're happy, I said, can you be mean to somebody? And she goes, no. I said, so what does that tell you if somebody's mean to you? It means on some level, something's bothering them. Something's making them unhappy. They don't know how to get rid of the emotion. So they're going to pick on the person that's in front of them. And it's safe
mm-hmm.
that they do it to a friend because she thinks you're just going to forgive her and move on. They don't think
mm-hmm.
about the fact that they might be injuring the other person. They just need to vent. And sometimes it goes further than that, obviously. But these were two friends, and her friend did something that hurt her very much. You know.
Well, I think that's a discussion we do need to have about people in general, and that is the fact that being bullied by somebody who doesn't care about you is very difficult and very tedious and very, it can break you down piece by piece
mm-hmm.
because you want to always stand tall, and eventually if they are relentless, then you do get beaten down.
Right.
The other issue often is somebody that you think cares about you hurts your feelings. And there is that old story, and we all know it's true, that you often lash out at the ones you know you love and they love you. Why? Because they're going to forgive you. So you can get rid
right.
of someone, like you just said, vent and get rid of it. That was always, that song always made a lot of sense to me. Even when I was a kid, you always hurt the one you love.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's very true. And it often is just an opportunity to rid yourself of some of your anger on somebody who's not going to come back at you, because you're really not up for a fight. You're not up for having a confrontation with anybody. You just want to vent. So often it comes out in that form, which is too bad, but I fear that we probably all have done it many times in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
So teaching a child how to accept that and know the difference between that and somebody really bullying them, they're really two different things.
Right. And it also,
you know,
it also comes down to, and this is something we've discussed before, it also comes down to helping children have a healthy self-esteem, having children be okay with who they are, because a lot of the kids who are the ones that are victimized or the ones that are sort of targeted for that are the ones that have such deep-seated insecurities, because they're not secure in who they are. They're not comfortable with who they are, and that they almost project that and can kind of draw that in at times. So, you know, it's really important for, like you said, all the adults. It's not just on the parents, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's on the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
It's on every adult that interacts with that child, is to always help children feel good about who they are. If a child is saying something like, oh, I'm not smart enough, I'm not pretty enough, I'm not tall enough, athletic enough, or whatever, help them. And maybe they're not tall enough. Maybe they're not athletic enough. You know what? But don't let them stay in that mode. Help them to find something they are good at. Talk to them. This is another thing that I just went through recently with my great niece. You know, she felt that there wasn't anything that she wanted to move towards. And in discussions, we found that she did have some pretty pretty high-minded interests, you know, but it was just a matter of getting her to talk about things that that got her excited, and it kind of uplifted her moods when she got to that point, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
it's very important to get kids to a place where they realize that they have something to offer and that they realize that everybody has something to offer, so that, you know, you don't want to let the pendulum swing too far the other way. You want them to feel good about themselves, but then not feel that they're better than anybody else, and understand that everybody has something that makes them special. And if you can start infusing that in a child when they're very young, it's going to set them up to be a little bit more secure in their own skin, a little bit more self-confident, and it's also going to help them appreciate other people and be more respectful. So it actually
mm-hmm.
does. It actually has a twofold benefit.
Well, I know grown-ups that could be counseled on that.
Isn't that true?
I do. I know grown-ups that, because the way life has treated them,
right,
for various reasons, some, especially, you know, not everybody's sensitive, like the part where she said, I don't know if this is helping her, if she's getting more thick-skinned. There has to be a little bit of that. You know,
right,
that attitude, oh, that's happened to me before, I got over it, I don't care what you say. You know, there could be a little bit of that. But there's also that, I don't know, knowing that you have another option, like knowing that the end of a school week, you're going to meet with a bunch of girls that you really click with and you feel safe with and everything. That's very special. And I'd like to also bring into this mix, this is how gangs started.
Mm-hmm.
Because children, many, 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 many years ago, were ostracized for their differences in the streets of New York, in the streets of Chicago, in the streets of Miami. You were Puerto Rican and had real dark skin, and your parents moved into a house and you got sent to a school where everybody had red hair or blonde hair and, you know, worked on a farm and did stuff like that, and you didn't fit in. So even though maybe nobody bullied you, you thought you didn't fit in. You thought that you were different. So then they'd seek out people that they felt were more like them. And then as that evolved through the years, it's become that way with the kids that are not, as you mentioned before, comfortable in their own skin. So then they find other people that aren't comfortable in their own skin. And that's really how we end up with a lot of the gangs. Now, you also, if you talk to somebody who's a member of a gang, often their whole family is a member of the gang, which I find scary, amusing, hard to understand, but not so hard to understand. It's one of those kind of things that if you sit and mull it over, you kind of get it, because, you know, they don't go to church. They don't belong to the American Legion. They don't belong here. They don't belong there. So they figure out something to belong to. And often they do it as a family. The oldest brother starts, and then pretty soon all the siblings are in. And in some cases, all of a sudden, mom and dad are a part of it as well.
Right.
So there is something about being with people, you know, if you're ostracized in school, or in the places where you're kind of stuck as a kid. Mom and dad move into a new house because, you know, life made that happen, and they think they're making the right decisions because they're busy trying to survive and pay the bills and do this and do that. And then all of a sudden, here's you, you know, and you feel like you're out in left field all by yourself with nobody there with you, nobody to protect you. It's not unusual that a kid on their own would find, you know. I mean, look at that very wonderful movie that was made years ago, The Breakfast Club.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that? And every kid that had to serve that detention that day was from a different group of kids, and it was very amusing.
Oh, yeah. That's one of, in fact, it's so funny that you bring that up, because I was actually going to mention that one of the other nights that we were talking about, as an example of, you know, here you take kids that would never have befriended each other in the normal course of the day, and by the end of that day, they had bonded because they had no choice but to sit there and share stories with each other. They learned that at the end of the day, with all their differences, they were more alike than they had ever realized, you know?
Well, and not and only were they alike, but they liked each other.
Right, right, right.
I love that.
It's one of my favorite movies, yeah.
Yeah,
because it's a great example.
It's a wonderful example about, you know, how we can be, if we just open up. I mean, my goodness, how many times have you and I said that to even to our own friends, you know, why are you so close-minded? How do you know that you don't like that? How do you know that you won't enjoy this? If you've really never tried it and you're going to, you know, that's like looking at a kid who says, I'm not eating that spinach. And you say, I had a rule at my house, still have a rule at my house. You can tell me you don't like something after you taste it. If you tell me you don't like something before you taste it, I'm not having any part of that. Let me bring in a new caller.
Okay.
Hello?
You really never tried it?
Hello? John?
Yes.
Hello? Is this you, John?
Yes, it is.
Hi, dear. How are you? You need to turn down all your stuff.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. I got it right now.
Okay.
You were mentioning about gang members.
Yes.
I got an opportunity last year to go down to the inner city of Chicago on a tour. And the elementary school was celebrating their 100th year as being an elementary school. And a couple relatives of mine was celebrating their 65th grammar school reunion at that school.
And their 65th reunion?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
And so we got, or 60th, so we got a tour of the school, and we went into several classrooms, and we got to see a lot of the kids, and from kindergarten to fifth grade. Well, kindergarten to eighth grade, but in this area, we were in, we saw second graders. And we're in the classroom. They were asking my parents and everyone questions and asking me questions about my camera. And I noticed after we visit, a friend of ours, she's in charge of 26 schools for after school activities for the inner city of Chicago. And while we were there, the principal was saying about second grade, mostly third grade, is when the kids will get involved with the games.
Second and third grade.
Yeah.
Well, that's what you see on TV. That is what you see on TV. I didn't know whether that was an honest-to-goodness truth. My youngest son got involved with the gang when he was 15. And he did it for protection.
Right.
And he did it because he felt that all of them together, and he was the only big kid. Everybody else was little guys. But they got harassed and picked on so much that they actually approached my son and almost like, you know, like he was their bodyguard.
Oh,
and
wow.
It got pretty involved. I can't go into it tonight, but someday I'll share it with everybody. And he's my, well, Shelley knows him, but he's my easiest going, mm-hmm. funniest, most likable kid. He's my youngest, and he's like a gentle giant, John. Mm-hmm. But he got involved in this because he was being harassed by other gangs. Because he was so big, they wanted him to join them.
Right.
And he didn't want to. And when I went to school and asked them to help, you know what the answer was? Tell them not to run around with those boys. And I said, are you listening to what I just said? And they said, yes, Mrs. Brewer, tell them to just stay away from those boys. So I knew then, you know, that I wasn't going to get much help. And even like this young lady writes in this letter that she's written about her daughter, she doesn't find fault in them. She just realizes that because it's so much and too involved, and the teachers and the school and all the officials and everything, there's just not enough of them to keep a handle on everything. So, again, it has to fall back on all of us. It can't just be on a select few.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes, and it's hard. I see these young kids in the school, and I was just thinking just the other night, looking at the pictures, and I was saying, I wonder if they will be involved with gangs and everything, because I know in the big city, I mean, we hear it every night. There's shooting and kids getting killed. And you know, one of the things I learned when I was in high school, I was in special ed for one thing, and my special ed teacher was a part-time police officer, and she was a civil class, and when he selected a few of the high honors students got to go down to the Chicago county jail and to the state prison and got to see everything. And one of the things here, if you wear different clothes, that's kind of singles a game from the shoelaces on your shoes and what type of gym shoes you wear. There's another sign of a gang. We'll bring up a gang thing. Another thing she was telling us is that the boundary areas. I mean, you could go on one side of the street, it's another gang. Go on the other side, it's the other gang. And also, about a good year and a half, I met a relative that wasn't involved with the gang, and he's out of it. And then during high school, one of the classmates, his brother was involved with the gang, and he mentioned about what they had to go through to become into the game. And they say, you could have 50 game members, and each one throws the hardest punch into the future game member's body, and they can end up killing the person by the punches. And there's all different things they're seeing in the city. And I know here in the Midwest, you got Chicago, Detroit, and it's horrible. I mean, mostly they're saying, we were just talking about this last week, and it's probably more worse here than we were in Africa, in the different areas over there. And because of the of the games because they get in the news every day about a person getting killed. And one of the kids was at the President Obama's inauguration that day. And she came
home. She got killed. I read about that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and President Obama's wife, Michelle, came in for the funeral.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, as I mentioned the other day, I've been to some things in Miami. Miami has some real tough stuff going on as well. And, well, up here we have a couple areas in West Palm, too, that can be a little scary. Recently, of course, again, you know, a lot of this you can attribute to what's going on in the whole world. Money problems, issues with hanging on to your home, issues with having a vehicle, issues with having insurance, issues with having all the things that it takes to function. And then when you get down to the kids' end, issues with having the right sneakers, the right clothes, you know, I mean, it all comes back to survival of the fittest at some point in time. And our world right now, at least the United States of America, is in trouble, and this adds to the anger and the frustration that's going on everywhere. So even though it's hard to think of a fifth grader being upset because of what's going on in the world, you have to understand the domino effect, which means that everything that starts at home, and mom and dad are worried about this and that, and they're fighting with each other, and maybe the power got shut off and everybody's upset because they don't know how they're good. There's a million things going out there today for people, and lots of it is way, way, way too heavy for a kid to handle, but unless they're, you know, oblivious, they do know what's going on. Consequently, that also adds to some of this other stuff that's going on. It's not always bullying and being mean to each other when you're in fifth grade through 10th grade doesn't always have anything to do with what's going on in school, because kids are just like we are. If we're angry with somebody like we just talked about, the anger that I'm dishing out on you has to do with the fact that I'm mad at my husband. It has nothing to do with you. So that is going on in our world as well. So this is a big, huge, humongous problem. And we won't fix it just by talking about one group of people. That's why everybody has to participate. Everybody has to understand. I love it when somebody comes up with something that's going to make things nicer, better for some young kid who's struggling. But it's just another Band-Aid. It's just another quick fix to make things better in the moment. Honestly, there's so many things that we have to fix. And today I listened to The Man in the Mirror by Michael Jackson, and I thought, oh, my God, he was so far ahead of his time.
Oh,
if you listen
absolutely.
To every word in that song, he so got it.
Yeah, he really did. Well, you know, there's so many moving parts to this issue. And like you just said, you know, first of all, there's not just one fix. There has to be an effort across many, many different lines of attack, so to speak, because you're talking about parental involvement, you're talking about other adults being observant enough to even realize when a child needs that extra word or you know, to be dealt with in a way that's going to keep them in a good place, thinking about themselves and others, all right?
Mm-hmm.
It has to be a fact of teaching kids how to treat each other, you know, how to provide outlets for them for their frustration, and how to give them safe havens. We were talking the other night about 211.com and a lot of the organizations.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
there has to be, like, for lack of a better way of putting it, there has to be like a spider web out there where everything is connected, okay, and everything goes
mm-hmm.
out from the center and then connects to everything else. The further out you go, it's still connected. It's still connected. You know what I'm saying? Because
mm-hmm.
There has to be solutions. There isn't one solution. It has to be conversations like this where people keep sharing ideas, where people keep putting a positive foot forward. And, you know, these grassroots efforts throughout history, grassroots efforts are what have changed things dramatically. I mean, look where we are now compared to where we were 100 years ago. I mean, you know.
I know. Well, that's absolutely the truth. And again, that just gives you the courage to know that we're capable.
Exactly.
You know, it just gives you that courage to know that, I mean, we've overcome wars and famine and plagues and just so many horrible things, and we're still standing. So
right.
there
and
is
got
that.
COVID. I mean, to think about it, I mean, think about how, you know, the issues like slavery, women not being allowed to vote, I mean, things like that. I mean, we've had major, major things that were literally overturned by grassroots efforts. Biggest travesties in history were overturned by a very small portion of the population.
Sometimes single individuals, Shell.
Exactly. That's
sometimes
my point.
Single individuals changed the world.
That's exactly my point.
Yeah.
And the whole thing is that, so the point I was trying to make is that no matter how you can contribute, whether you're getting on a blog talk radio show like you're doing, Rainey, and you're addressing thousands of people, or it's somebody getting up in front of a school class and talking to 15 kids, or just sitting down with your niece and nephew one night and sharing something with them and trying to uplift them, it doesn't matter where you contribute. Every time you have spent a few minutes uplifting anybody, whether it be a child or another adult or you're giving somebody a good piece of advice, you've now added to the solution.
Yes.
You
Amen.
It doesn't have to be anything grandiose. And what happens is you might inspire somebody to start a blog talk radio show or to do something on a grander level. But there's whenever you're doing something out of love and compassion, no matter how small it is, it's going to cause a ripple effect, and it's going to end up being a grandiose effort at some point because it can't help but progress forward on and on and on. And that's how it works.
That's right. And the whole idea of what I feel like I'm doing, we're doing, all of us, all of you that have been so wonderful and joined me and rallied around what I'm trying to do, is just waking people up. You know, it's like a tap on the shoulder because everybody wants it to be better. But sometimes they think that they're all alone and they think that their vote doesn't count. I mean, how many times have you heard that?
Right, right.
You know, so, but it isn't true. It isn't true. Because like you said, every centimeter that you move, you get closer to the object. It just can't help but get closer to what the problem is. So I think this letter tonight maybe will help somebody organize. When I was a kid, it was brownies. When I was real young, my mother was a den mother, and then you moved into Girl Scouts. My kids belonged to the school functions, you know, where we'd go roller skating at the school and we'd do all these kind of things. And what it would do, you know, is just keep people together. And then, of course, in a small town in upstate New York, there would be old home days, and each little community had their own old home day, and it would be like seeing old friends that lived, you know, a whole 15 miles away from you that you didn't see all the time, and there'd be a parade, and there would be, my daughter was Little Miss Newfield one year, so all of those things pulled everybody together and kept us all feeling like we were on the same the same level, I guess. I hate to use that word, but
There was a sense of community, of belonging.
Yes, yes.
And that's something that we lack today.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many people do you know that actually know their neighbors and speak to them on a regular basis?
I don't know any anymore.
That's
I don't know any.
It wasn't like that. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like that 50 years ago. All right? When I grew up, I knew all my neighbors. I was friends with all my neighbors when I was a kid. Even some of the adults that didn't have kids, I was friends with. And you know, they'd have my sister and I over their house, and you know, they'd give us cupcakes and stuff. I mean, we were literally friends with everybody on our block.
That was the same with us. And well, I mean, I never knew how many kids were going to be there for dinner. So, you know, part of that hasn't changed much, but even still, it is about that, and it is about, well, that's why I think if you pull your family together, if you can get your family where it needs to be, it grows.
Right.
Your family will grow into someone else's, and then pretty soon you've got all of their family, and then pretty soon you pull in one other person, and then you've got their family. That's what makes a real community, and that's what makes us all care enough about each other to be there for each other.
Right.
Now,
right.
John and I have never laid eyes on each other. Never laid eyes on each other. I've seen his picture on Facebook, and I'm sure he's seen mine. I don't know. He may have seen me on TV, but I feel connected to John. John's out there today shoveling snow after he had a car accident. He has a swollen ankle. He has all kinds of stuff going on with his neck. So I message him and say, John, stay off your ankle. You know, I felt like, you know, I'm connected to him. He's my friend, and I care about him. And we've never laid eyes on each other, have we, John?
No, we never have. And they're like him, and we probably have about 7 inches of snow.
What? Oh, my goodness.
So
you really do have to be careful out there, because if you slip in that snow with all the other stuff that's going on, you're going to be in some kind of a body cast or something. Now, you must be careful.
Yeah. And I know that because with my, because I injured my ankle several years ago, and just last week is when I re-injured it. And I know this time it was just like I re-injured it several years ago because I could hear it cracking. And then with the neck, was a year ago yesterday, I was in that car accident, and I still had the neck pain. And so it's, I'll be seeing the neck doctor next month. And so, we'll see what will happen. But, you know, one of the things here in our next year is after school. Kids, there's a YMCA bus that will take the kids from our school district, from our schools, to the YMCA for after-school programs while their parents are working. And then they can come back. The parents will pick up the kids at the YMCA. And so that way the kids are involved. And then with the Inner Chicago, with the games I was mentioning, our one friend who's in charge with after-school activities.
Now, let me ask you something, John. Do they charge money for that stuff?
For the
For the bus to pick them up to go to the YMCA, is there a fee for that?
No.
See, that's wonderful. Because a lot of kids wouldn't be able to go if you were charging money for that.
Yeah.
So that's lovely. And again, you know, Florida does stuff like that. I don't want to say that Florida is a bad place to live, because Florida has lots of wonderful things that they do. But the point is that we need to all get on the same page and support the things that are done like that and make sure that they stay functioning and taking, you know, making the right moves instead of the wrong moves. Florida has a lot of organizations that, well, like this 211, this is an amazing organization. I mean, they can help anybody from a week old to 95 or 100. Age is not a factor. So there are wonderful things going on here. But it's, again, it's about supporting them. It's about knowing about them. It's about making sure that if you know somebody needs them, doing something about it, making sure that they know that they can get that help. It's about that kind of camaraderie that is what's missing. So if you've got an organization where you live and it does wonderful things for people and you keep it a secret, shame on you. You should be sharing that with everybody so that everybody can reap the benefits, not just the people that are aware of it. And that is a problem. So I think that all these small towns and all these small areas are doing some wonderful stuff. I know they are because I've met so many amazing people on this journey. But we do have to share all that with everybody, because every time I turn around, I find somebody who doesn't, you know. Right now I'm trying to help somebody who is 84. He just had a serious operation, and he can't live where he was living anymore because they think he was sharing a house with somebody else, and they're worried that they might have to take care of him. So he's in a nursing home. When he leaves the nursing home, he doesn't know where he's going to go. Now,
wow.
I mean, so it really doesn't matter. You know, it's all ages, all sizes. It's just us. We have to, and you see that it's happening. And you see that there are people out there that really do care and that really want to make a difference. I mean, Shelley, you remember Mikey's hospital room after he got hurt?
Yeah.
I mean, it was amazing. And again, that was one of those times when you realize that people really, really, really do care. But it should be constant, not just when somebody's in so much pain that you know, it should be all the time. It should be always and forever that you care enough to help somebody if they're in trouble. And that doesn't mean giving them money. That just means being there for them. It doesn't mean, you know, sharing your house with them even. I mean, in some cases that might be okay. But I'm just talking about caring. I'm just talking about giving them the time of day and being them for them when they're needing it. And that seems like an awfully small thing to me. And I think that we might be finally getting closer to that. As long as we, like you said, if we keep doing things like this show, people keep participating, all the feedback I've gotten on the show is just wonderful. Really, really wonderful. From people I didn't even think I'd hear from.
Right.
So it is, people are taking notice and they do care. Some people just need to be prodded a little bit into knowing, you know, that it's not going to hurt them to pay attention to what's going on around them. And I do think, though, that we're more than capable of doing all the things that we need to do. And I do think that's what's going to happen, that we will start doing all the things that we need to do, and we will start taking care of our children, our old people, everybody. I don't have to worry about being a child anymore, but there sure as hell better be somebody around to take care of me when I'm ready.
I know. Yeah, I know. It's something you say a lot, and I think it's, like, funny. It's like you're kind of giving your family a little preview there of what they can expect.
That's it. I tell them it ain't going to be easy, so start practicing right now.
No, you're going to be a sharp cookie right up into the end, I have no doubt.
Yeah, I'll probably still think I'm the boss, and everybody will laugh at me behind my back. John, you take care of your mom and dad, don't you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom's been probably been ill over a year. Last year at this time, she had 4 blood clots. 2 went through her heart into her lung. 2 was in her leg. And at that time, my father was on vacation. And I'm calling 911 and went to the hospital, and then they found it. She had a blood clot. They went in and took the filter in. And then in the meantime, she ended up injuring her shoulder. And then she has asthma. And now she's nausea in the morning, every morning. And this has been going on since June. Mm-hmm. And we've been to several specialists in top hospitals here in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're still trying to figure out what's making her ill.
Well, how old is your mom?
She was born in 1938.
So she's 75. Well, yeah. Almost 75, or if she had a birthday this year, she'll be 75. So, well, you know, it's here in Florida, it's not unusual to have friends that I have. We have, Shelley and I have friends that are still working at 75.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yep.
And still very, very productive. Florida is known for that because the weather permits people that are a little bit older to stay so active. And they do. And it makes a big difference in their longevity and in their health. So we have one friend who can run circles about around most of us, and she is
yep.
She's like what, 76? Didn't she just
yeah.
turn 76?
Yeah.
And she's
mm-hmm.
amazing.
And she's so sharp.
Yeah, yeah. And she sings and plays a guitar, and for years she worked for lawyers, and she's been an administrative assistant, executive administrative assistant and stuff like that, and she's amazing. And we have
yep.
quite a few friends like that.
Mm-hmm.
Shelley and I are the youngest, and Shelley's still a kid, but I'm not. And
yeah, 54-year-old kid.
Yeah, well, you know. 54. I remember when I was 54. It was a very long time ago. So
you know what my pat answer is whenever anybody tells me that I don't look like I'm 54, and they say, "Oh, you look so much younger than that." And I say, "Well, that's only because I'm immature."
Oh, well, that does help a little bit, I think.
Yeah,
to be honest with you, it does help a little bit. So, but I do think, like I said, I think. An idea for us to put out there tonight before the show is over. We've kind of had a nice chat tonight, but I do want people to think about what this woman wrote about organizing a safe environment for their child if they think their child is suffering the way this young woman was. And she
right.
didn't take her away from it. She didn't move her away from it so that she's hiding from it. What she did was she just gave her a safe place. Which is wonderful, and I thought it was incredibly smart of her to think of it and to make it happen. And as she said, it's still a part of their life. So, but now it's moved into being a little bit more grown up, which is also a major lesson. And she did her daughter proud by teaching her to care about other people, even though. There were times in her life when it seemed like other people didn't care about her. So
exactly.
I thought that whole story was just beautiful. And I will figure out a way. I'll get one of the grandchildren or something so that you can all hear this poem that I don't think you'll miss much by not seeing the video, even though it's very cute. It's his words, and his words are wonderful. And I'll try to figure out a way so everybody can hear that as well. And, it was really, really beautiful. It was so much more refreshing than some of the videos I've been getting about kids getting beat up on the bus and all the other kind of stuff that I've been getting. I was very pleased to get that today and this letter. This came, of course, from Gary, who's been an amazing supporter and is doing his own thing out there with the Bully movie and really getting it out there and helping. And now there's been quite a few other things. And I guess I think it's Thursday night, but I'll let everybody know tomorrow night on CNN they're going to do a Bully special.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah. So
you're going to update us on that tomorrow?
Yes, I'm pretty sure it's Anderson Cooper, and I think it's going to be Thursday night, but I will let everybody know tomorrow night when it is, and so everybody can watch it and get some help from it. So thank you, John, for calling us again and updating us, and please don't fall in the snow.
No, I won't.
Okay, and take care of yourself, and I hope your mom feels better very soon, and we will have another evening with you filling us in some more on your life, because I think you helped quite a few people the night that you spoke. So I love you, and thank you, and Miss Shelley, I love you, and I will see you, I won't see you tomorrow afternoon, right? You can't make it to the...
Yeah, I unfortunately I can't make it,
but I will
call you tomorrow night.
Okay, wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you very much. And from my heart to yours, this is Renee, and thanks for joining us. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.